And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we're in the new year. I trust you had a good holiday and that you're ready for the unexpected, because a new year is always filled with unexpected things. For example, I don't suppose you expected that Trump would manage to guarantee that there was going to be no negotiations with Iran, since he didn't give 2 minutes thought to what would be the outcome of assassinating the most important general that the Iranians have, the Iranian version of Douglas MacArthur. But that's just one of those things, I guess.
Well, it's one of those things because, don't forget, Trump has essentially eviscerated the national security apparatus. He's lost or driven out key people all up and down the line. He's replaced them with temporaries. And the fact of the matter is, he doesn't take advice anyway.
I know. So isn't it funny that he said that the excuse for assassinating this General Suleiman was that the intelligence people told him that he was going to do something, and this was preemptive?
These are the same intelligence people, of course, that he says you can't believe when it talks about Russia interference in the election.
These are the same intelligence people whose briefings he refuses to listen to.
Right.
So,
and of course,
do you really think they told him anything? I think he just made it up.
Well, I think somebody told him something, the same way that Erdogan put something in his ear back just before the Syrian thing, or the way the Putin tells him things, or the way, you know, in the back channel that Sean Hannity fills his head with nonsense.
I know. This guy thinks we have the strongest army in the world. You can't beat us. Any war will be short, so forth and so on. Any war will be short. How many years? 18 years in Afghanistan so far?
And counting.
Fighting a bunch of guys who don't have an airplane, who don't have any anti-aircraft artillery, who don't have anything but pickup trucks. 18 years? Short wars? Best army in the world? What, are you kidding me?
Well, it's what's new? I mean, back in the 19th century, they beat out the British, which was the best army in the world. They beat the Russians back in the 1970s. Why should we be any different?
Exactly.
You know, I'm always reminded, you know, in the first Conan Doyle story about Sherlock Holmes, that Dr. Watson was recovering from his wounds garnered in Afghanistan.
Right. That's right. That's right. But do you think that anybody has told Trump, or that Trump actually realizes, that Iran has 80 million people? I mean, this is not Grenada.
No, it's not Grenada. The Middle East has been a mess since George W. Bush broke it.
Yeah.
Back in 2003. This is still fallout from the Iraqi invasion.
That's right. That's right. But and I don't think Americans, I mean, you and I are old enough to remember Douglas MacArthur. Many people don't know anything about MacArthur, but I remember when MacArthur was revered as the nearest thing to a god. When Truman fired MacArthur, I remember that the New York City school system dismissed the students and bussed all the kids, a million kids, to Central Park to greet General MacArthur, who was returning from being fired from Korea. Now, New York City was not a reactionary place.
Did he have a ticker tape parade?
He had a ticker tape parade, and he came through Central Park. I can see myself. I remember with my class standing, waving at General MacArthur. Everybody loved General MacArthur. This guy, Suleiman, in Iran, has exactly the same standing, or had the same standing. We should have picked him off years ago. Trump's words are the words of a two-bit gangster, not even a big gangster.
Well, remember, Trump was the one that predicted repeatedly and wrongly that Obama would be starting a war with Iran in order to protect his reelection.
Well, guess what we're looking at?
He's he's projecting again. He's just putting himself in the place of someone else.
Well, so that's one of the things we couldn't have predicted. Although apparently Lindsey Graham could have predicted it because Trump told him, although he didn't bother to tell any of the people he was supposed to tell, like the Gang of Eight, the heads of the intelligence committees of the Congress. Those he didn't tell. But Lindsey Graham, Mr. Buffoon, him he told. So that Graham's wouldn't have been a prediction. It would have just been blurting out what this guy told him. But let's talk about what might happen in this year. What do you think is going to happen? We have structural things coming up, like the census. We've got the election coming up with the primaries.
Well, the election is already, and it has been, for the Democrats, starting to clear a little bit in terms of the field. And we had two more one more dropout and one near dropout this week. Julian Castro dropped out, the prime Hispanic candidate who was going nowhere and went nowhere in this. And then Marianne Williamson, who hasn't been seen or heard from much since, the first or the second debate, fired her staff that nobody knew she really had.
She had 46 people working for her. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. That is a lot of people. I don't know how they were getting paid or whatever, but they should have seen it coming. Of course, she's the one that kind of does the predictions in those things. what it's really boiled down to, and it's fairly remarkable, is that Biden has maintained a pretty steady lead. Throughout this, there's the first two states, Iowa and New Hampshire, are not going to be Biden states, but they're not really representative of what the Democratic Party of the United States is. They're heavily white rural states.
They're not demonstrative of what America is.
Right. But both of them could fall in the Democratic column. Iowa did for Obama the first time through. It's gotten a little rougher, but who knows what Trump's effects on his tariff policy has done to Iowa farmers. And New Hampshire has been more bluish purple than reddish purple of late, except for the busloads of Hispanics that nobody saw in the last election coming over from Massachusetts.
Well, that's their strength. They're able to be invisible.
Yes.
And I see Corey Lewandowski pulled out. He decided not to run for Senate.
Yes. Which means he probably took a poll and found out that nobody wanted
right.
him in the background, and that Trump was going to be very unpopular, and he wasn't going to carry it out. But the Biden continues to lead, and what's happened is you have Bernie has maintained a fairly strong his base and position, but it's a secondary position because he's being hurt by Elizabeth Warren.
I don't think he's being hurt by her now. Not that much because she's fading.
She's fading, but she still is in double digits. And she did raise over $20 million this quarter. That just came out this week.
She raised $21 million.
So you have those.
But, Bernie raised $35 million.
Bernie.
Buttigieg raised $25 million. Right. Biden raised $22 million and Elizabeth Warren $21-plus million, right?
And then the two billionaires, doesn't matter what they've raised, they're really not raising. I mean, Tom Steyer's, his whole purpose of raising was really to have a mailing list of people that he could do. And the one thing that we can say about both he and Bloomberg now is they're really running more anti-Trump ads than ads for themselves. I mean, they insert themselves in these things, but they're starting to go after Trump, which I think is a good thing. I just wish that both of them would kind of pull out and they'd spend their money on Senate races or House races. By the way, another Republican dropped this week for his reelection, a guy from Tennessee. I don't think that seat's going to change, but we'll have to see. And keeping the House Democratic is certainly a high priority. but they have to get the Senate. And there are signs that they have a better shot than people thought a year ago at doing this. Arizona is going to be a close race. The McSally race. She lost before, and she could very well lose again.
And she's running against Gifford, right?
Kelly. Gabby Gifford's husband. Mike Kelly, the athlete.
Right.
And then, you know, the main race, Susan Collins, is not very popular. She's in a box right now, trying to walk a fine line. She has to stay with the president in order to, as a matter of fact, he kind of endorsed her this week to some extent. And I've always called her a moderate of convenience. So she's got a tough road to hoe. That's two. We have Tillis in North Carolina. That's three.
Is Tillis really in danger? I mean, I thought that.
Well, North Carolina is one of those states that's.
That's been a lot of voter suppression.
There's been a lot of voter suppression, but there's been a lot of gerrymandering there more than voter
suppression. But that won't matter for the Senate race.
That's right. It won't matter for the Senate or the presidential race. So there are a couple places, and of course, out in Colorado, you have a Republican senator who's going to be in trouble, Cory Gardner. Mm-hmm. And the one Democrat that probably is most at risk is Doug Jones down in Alabama. I mean, he won essentially because Roy Moore was the candidate with Trump on the ballot. I don't see how he can really, really stay there. So they need to pick up. There has to be a surprise somewhere. A state. It could be Mitch McConnell. It could be Lindsey Graham.
Is Graham up for re-election?
South Carolina. Yeah, and the polling in South Carolina has it, you know, within only a couple of points, a point or two. He's running against an African-American. Last time he had a joke candidate, some guy named Green who won. Nobody knows how he actually won the nomination. It was a fluke and a whatever, but he's got that. And McConnell's continues to be very unpopular. So we have that. There are possibilities there, but the presidential race is going to be the big one, and Trump is going to be going all out once the Democrats are able to consolidate on a candidate. And if they don't have the same problems where you have the voters, if it's Biden, that the Bernie voters decide to stay home to a certain extent, I don't think that that's going to happen to the degree it happened last time. And there's a debate as to really how much of that really happened last time. So we're going to see. There's still plenty of time for a lot of gaffes and a lot of things to come out.
Well, let me ask you about something else that's related to this, and that's the census. The census begins April 1st. Of course, we won't have effects of the census until 2 years further along, 2022.
Right.
But the census is this year. Let's talk about that for a moment, because that's really one of those clerical things that has real political significance.
First of all, the census and the Constitution 10 years, and I really have thought that whether it's the Commerce Department runs it under Wilbur Ross, and I don't know whether they're fully competent to handle it and whether they'll have enough money to handle it. So there's a question on the count. There was a question on whether they would suppress certain people, because it's not a census of the citizens. It's a census of the entire population. And based on that population, there are ramifications. One is money is allocated in a lot of federal programs based on population. Number two, what happens is you gather a lot of demographic information about people. It's supposed to be kept secret for like 70 years or something like that. But you gather a lot of general demographic data about the country, about average income and population distribution among racial lines and whatever. And then the third thing that we're talking about most is the allocation of the House of Representatives under the one man, one vote. Mm-hmm. So there's always a shifting. Mm-hmm. And what we've had over the past several generations, the past several censuses, particularly since 1950, really, that there's been a shift of population away from the north and the east, what's now called the Rust Belt, towards the south and the west, and basically from blue states to red states. Pennsylvania has steadily lost seats in Congress and is scheduled to lose another one. New York has steadily lost. They're going to lose another one. Michigan could lose a seat. So could Ohio. And surprising for the first time, out in California, which has been growing seats and has over 50 congressional seats, they may actually lose a seat for the first time. Not because they're losing population, but because they're not growing as fast. What's happened in California is the cost of living has gotten so high, and the ramifications of the huge population, the people are actually moving out of California in numbers that are greater than people being born and moving in, so that what's happening is they're basically staying steadier, and other states are outgrowing them. Texas is going to get 3 new seats, probably. Florida, 2. You're going to probably get one in North Carolina, is another one. And Arizona might be another state that may grow. However, in all of these states, there's a question as to whether they'll remain red. Texas, in particular, has been showing to be moving more rapidly blue than people had thought. They'd always projected that the 2024 election might be the one that it tilts. If Texas ever tilts to the blue, Republicans are in really deep trouble, because then you have California with 50-some votes and Texas.
52.
Texas will be the next in line. And, you know, the Wisconsins and the Michigans won't matter nearly as much as Texas does. Florida has been more problematic for the Democrats trying to win, and there's been more voter suppression there. North Carolina has come back towards blue a little bit more than it was tracking red. So we'll have to see what happens. In Pennsylvania, one of the ramifications is we're almost certain to lose a seat. Again, it's not because Pennsylvania isn't growing. It's just basically staying steady, and it's not growing as fast as other states. And with the Democrats in charge, when you have a Democratic governor and a Democratic Supreme Court, the redistricting is going to be much fairer towards the Democrats. And it's likely that what's going to happen is that there's going to be a seat lost out in the western part of the state among 2 Republicans, and they'll have to fight it out. In our neck of the woods, one of the questions is, because our part of the state isn't growing either, that the district, Matt Cartwright's district, will have to enlarge itself. And whether it enlarges itself by taking in more Republican areas or more Democratic areas is a question. In the last election, he lost Easton, or the last reapportionment, he lost Easton, which was more Democratic. But he gained the Democratic parts of Luzerne County. We'll have to see what happens there. It won't be seen for another couple of years. Meanwhile, he's got a tough race, re-election race coming up this year. The Republicans are putting a lot of money in. They've targeted him, and they've come up with someone who on the surface has a viability as a candidate. He's a wounded Army veteran. So we'll have to see there on that.
So let me ask you about the presidential election, because that will be, of course, the big political news all this year. Can Trump win? Can Trump lose?
Yes.
Yes, I thought you'd say that. Exactly.
Yeah, of course. Well, notice no hesitation.
No hesitation, right. Well, I know you were definite.
He can win. You know, last time he threaded the needle, and he, by 77,000 votes, cast over 3 electoral states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, he won. He was up to 306. If he holds on to Wisconsin, even losing Pennsylvania and Michigan, he can still get to 270, provided everything else stays the same. But the likelihood of everything else staying the same continues to diminish. For instance, Arizona could track blue, which would give problems. North Carolina, which went red last time, also has a possibility, although there's, you know, been voter suppression there occurring. They talk about Georgia even, where there's massive voter suppression and knocking people off the rolls. But if the Democrats are able to have voter registration drives and get people and get people out, they could win this and decisively. And as I said, there's, you know, you never know what kind of surprises can come out between now and then. Iowa could flip.
Do you think Trump could carry Pennsylvania again?
If Biden's the candidate, it's highly doubtful. It's highly doubtful. And it'll be interesting to see for our area whether Trump decides that he's going to try and spend a lot of time in Luzerne County and up in Erie County, or if he gives up on it. I mean, it's always, I remember the particularly the first Obama election. It was great for our area to see all the candidates in all the time and see all that money spent in our area as well on television, et cetera. So I think if Biden's the candidate, Pennsylvania is really going to be lost to the Republicans, not that they may not try. And Trump may try to go elsewhere and steal another state from the Democrats. Maybe Nevada he could try.
Yeah, although but that doesn't count. Nevada has six electoral seats.
Yeah. But it does weaken the Democratic count. So, you know, you just never know where. He obviously had very good polling and very good strategizing the last time. And the big question is going to be, you know, first, who the opponent is, because it becomes a binary election. And
let's go down the line. We got, effectively, you got five possibilities, right? Or four possibilities. You got Biden, you got Bernie, you got Elizabeth Warren, you got Buttigieg. There isn't anybody else, realistically.
Right.
So, okay, right. So you spoke about Biden. Well, what if it's Bernie?
Well, Bernie would energize the younger folk and that part of the base, but it would be a real question. You would hear the word socialist an awful lot. And there's some stuff lurking in the back with Bernie, you know, on his tax returns. He's always been kind of coy. He's released information, but not nearly what Biden or Elizabeth Warren have released. There's something back there that he just seems to be hesitant about, whether it's just that he feels he doesn't want to or whether he's trying to hide something. We don't know. But what it comes down to is if people are looking for excuses not to vote for a Democrat, they'll find it.
That's right. They'll find it. But Bernie brings out a lot of people that nobody else brings out.
Yeah. But he might lose a lot of people.
Well, do you think that the Clintonians would not vote for a Democrat if that Democrat was Bernie?
No, I think most of the Clintonians would vote for Bernie. I think that they would see Trump as more of an existential threat. Yeah. But there are people, you keep hearing about it, some of the older folk who just, I got an email from one of my friends, he's living in Jersey and Florida now. You know, it's the same thing. He can't, you know, the same crap about, I can't vote for a socialist, you know? And they don't have to vote for Trump. They could just sit it out.
Right.
Like they did in Michigan last time.
Right.
And that'd be a disaster.
All right. So how about Elizabeth?
Elizabeth is kind of in the same boat as Bernie, but, you know, she's a woman, so she's got certain advantages there.
But also disadvantages.
She would then be vulnerable. Yeah, and the same disadvantage. You know, Biden was asked about, would he run into the same problems as Hillary? He says, well, you know, people voted against her because she was a woman. I don't have that problem. And you'd still get some of that with her. And don't forget, the air went out of her balloon to a certain extent once she started having to explain what her programs were or how much they would cost. It just did. The numbers looked so big and so daunting. It just, she didn't know how to package it. She didn't. And
but that's interesting because Bernie doesn't get that kind of response, and he has bigger programs.
Right.
Why do you think he doesn't get those questions? Or that doesn't turn anybody off, and his programs are bigger, and yet Warren can't prevail in the argument.
I'm not sure. I think part of it is that people see that Bernie really believes in this stuff, and that he seems to have worked it out a little better. Or they feel, hey, look, we'll vote for Bernie, and you know he might not get it all through Congress, but might get something through.
Right.
He's been in Congress a lot longer than Elizabeth Warren. So we'll have to see.
What about Buttigieg?
My opinion, he's still awful. I mean, he announced this week he's not going to run for his third term as mayor. Now, he's the mayor of a Midwestern city that he won with 8,500 votes or something like that.
Yeah,
that's an awful big leap.
Yeah,
he comes across very well. He's very smooth. He's a great communicator. I just don't think it's his time has come on that. And he might catch lightning in the bottle like Obama did, but he's not, nearly as qualified as Obama.
Well, qualified or not, he has no support in the African American community, even though he has a huge African American population percentage wise in the city that he leads. He has no support in the Hispanic community. So
And don't forget, in the African American community, one of the problems is that he's gay.
Yes,
there's an element of that community as open and welcoming as they are to people who are different that rejects the gay agenda, and it's sad to say, but you hear that. Part of it is religiously based, I believe, it is what it is, and he'd have a hard time on that. He's really, really needs that.
So your conclusion is, with Biden, Trump probably loses. With Bernie, Trump may lose. With Elizabeth, Trump wins. With Buttigieg, Trump wins.
As it looks now.
Well, now is when we're talking.
Now we're talking. A lot of things could change. You just don't know how this Iran situation is going to play out, whether it winds up hurting Trump. You don't know what the stock market
is. Well, Iran is really, to me, wag the dog.
It could be. It certainly is, or something isn't played out. And don't forget, it covered up another big story that came out this week about Trump's finances. And we still have the impeachment.
Right.
The story. Back in August, Lawrence O'Donnell announced that Trump's loans with Deutsche Bank had been, I believe he said, co-signed by a Russian oligarch. And he had under threat, he had to eat his words because he didn't have it well sourced. And this week there was a report out, again, questionable sources, but a whistleblower in the Deutsche Bank that said he did indeed have a co-signer. It was the bank that's Russian government controlled and that's under sanctions.
Right.
So we'll see, but,
which would explain, maybe, why Deutsche Bank said they didn't have Trump's tax returns. Because, after all, if the Russian government was underwriting the loan, what did they care what Trump filed with them?
Right. Right. They don't need that. So we'll see. And, and we still have to see how this impeachment plays out, this dance between Nancy Pelosi.
Do you think there ever will be a trial?
I think there has to be at some point. I mean, if they went through the trouble of impeachment, Nancy Pelosi has to send it to the Senate at some point, or else the whole Democratic Party is going to look crazy.
Well,
I mean, how can you impeach and then say, forget about the trial?
Well, what she'll say is that the trial is rigged. So what's the point of the trial? Because McConnell will never come up with the rules that will either provide the witnesses that he says have to. They don't have witnesses, he says. There's no case here, but we won't call witnesses.
But the longer the things are held out, the more information comes out. Look at this week. Lev Parnas, turns out, got permission from the court to turn over information on his cell phone to the House Intelligence Committee.
Oh, there you go. All right. You came down firmly. Trump will either win or lose, and we'll see if that's true in November. Meanwhile, have a good year.
You too.
Thanks.
All right. See you next week.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps and prints.